This is Toby Sumter with your CrossPolitik News Brief for Tuesday, February 4th, 2020. For anyone who was not on social media over the last 24 hours, let me be the first to fill you in on the fact that Jennifer Lopez and Shakira apparently did their very best National Geographic Missing Link impressions during the Super Bowl halftime show. I didn't see the Dancing Poodle Circus event personally, but Jeb Bush said it was the very best halftime show he's ever seen. So there's that. But there's been a healthy uproar from sane, civil, and relatively Christian quarters, and I will just add that this is how you know that the hashtag MeToo movement has been nothing but lies all along. The Cosbys and Weinsteins of the world deserve whatever justice demands, but they are scapegoats, not emblems of actual repentance. Do not be deceived. A culture that celebrates this kind of public shaming and degrading of women made in the image of God does not give a damn about women. Of course, millions of Christians watched and giggled and made excuses about how they are not bothered by all the skin, but for some reason, they don't feel comfortable taking their family to the strip club next Sunday. Or just do a quick thought experiment. One of your neighbors invited you over next weekend and, after lunch, offered to let you watch them have sex. And when you objected, they offered to play some loud dance music and turn the lights down and take off most of their clothes while gyrating on the table. And when you object once again, they look at you confused. But why is it okay for you to watch that kind of thing on TV or YouTube or Netflix or at the theater? And the answer is that we are a very special kind of hypocrite. When the objection comes, well, what about violence in movies or bad language? Well, I would have the same objection if people were actually being stabbed and shot in the filming of war movies. But everyone knows it's fake. But when a woman is undressed on screen, she really is being shamed and degraded. The Bible also contains examples of profanity and obscenity and swearing. It is not gratuitous, as it is often in our modern films and television. And the Bible also contains many warnings about the power of words and the tongue and letting unclean things come out of our mouths, which is why no Christian should be known for having a foul mouth. But there is at least a biblical category for representing evil in storytelling accurately. But there is no such biblical category for being entertained by the public shaming of women, which is what it is, whether they are being paid millions or not. Next up, Jonah Goldberg on Alan Dershowitz. Now, I have a lot of respect for Jonah Goldberg. His book, Liberal Fascism, is phenomenal, and I cannot recommend it highly enough. It connects so many important historical dots over the last century. Liberal fascism, get it, read it, listen to it, do it. I also respect the ground that he has sought to stake out, somewhere between never-Trumper and mostly never-Trumper. It's a lonely place for sure, but one where he is willing to admit that Trump has done some good things for our republic while generally urging conservative America to do better. In other words, he's trying to retain a rational, conservative opposition to Trump, but not an emotional reactionism or derangement syndrome. And I completely sympathize with his point that many of Trump's fans are just as bad as his foes. There truly is a lot of derangement going around on all sides. But I want to offer here just a brief pushback, but one that I trust is nevertheless friendly, appreciative, and hopefully not all deranged. This last Friday, Jonah issued a short plea to the Republican Senate that if they're going to exonerate Trump, to at least do so with some kind of accompanying resolution insisting that the acquittal has nothing at all to do with the case that Alan Dershowitz made in defense of Trump last week. We covered that defense in detail last Friday in the CrossPolitik News Brief, Friday, January 31st. Now, I happen to think that Jonah has a point. He raises the question of whether a president who gets drunk every day, for example, can be impeached. His behavior doesn't rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors, as our Constitution requires, but it is still reprehensible. Jonah is rightly worried about precedent. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Jonah is concerned that we are setting ourselves up for a liberal president that cannot be canned by a conservative legislature. And conservatives, whatever our massive blind spots, are at least on paper concerned with principles, which not to put too fine a point on it, are those things that don't change over time or between administrations. Principles are standards that can measure the same thing on Monday or Friday, this year or next year, Republican or Democrat. I am also concerned with this, and every Christian should be. The foundational biblical principle here is equal weights and measures. Those Christians that supported President Clinton's impeachment and removal from office, for example, but who do not now support Trump's impeachment and removal, ought to be able to articulate a principled argument for that stance. I'm not saying that case can't be made, but Christians should care to make it. Otherwise, you cannot go on calling that windsock your principles every time the winds blow a different direction. Okay, I take that back. You can call it your principles, but then you're just a vanilla liberal. But back to my point, it seems to me that the case Dershowitz laid out is pretty stinking strong historically, even if it hasn't been upheld consistently by the courts or by the legislature. The debate of the founding fathers seems utterly clear, and their concern was that impeachment be based on actual, concrete crimes. The repeated phrase was that making the justification for removal any less concrete would essentially make the president a creature of the legislature rather than having its own independent existence. The thing that I think Jonah Goldberg is actually searching for, hunting for, is a category that we call sin. And it's a category that the church has left behind. This is why we need the church and other institutions in a moral republic, institutions that can discipline for sin while leaving crimes to the state. There's a lot in Jonah's argument worth interacting with, even if I differ to some degree. Finally, for today, the Clarkston, Washington School Board recently adopted the Washington State's gender inclusive policy. For those of you who don't know, Cross Politics Studios is just 30 or 40 miles north of Clarkston, Washington, so this hits somewhat close to home. According to Justina Tomtas of the Lewiston Tribune, the gender-inclusive schools policy was approved unanimously last week with no discussion. Why did they not discuss it? Was it because they all agree, or was it because they're all afraid? Or how much money? Never mind. School districts in Washington are required to adopt the policy by the end of the month to be in compliance with state law. The policy allows students to use restrooms and locker rooms associated with their gender identity instead of the gender they were assigned at birth. It also allows students to choose their preferred name and pronoun and, get this, allows the student to decide if that information can be shared with their parents or guardians. Let me say that again. The Washington State policy allows the student to decide if that information can be shared with their parents or guardians. I'm quoting now from the State School Directors Association. It states, for families who are supportive, using the student's name and pronoun could be affirming for the student. For parents who are not supportive or who are not aware of the student's transition at school, referring to their name and pronoun could be very dangerous. The district will not condone the intentional or persistent refusal to respect a student's gender identity or gender expression, or inappropriate release of information regarding a student's transgender or gender expansive status, unquote. Did you get that? Notice what's going on here. The policy states that parents who are not supportive might be very dangerous to students, and the district itself is the one that will decide. And they will not condone the intentional or persistent refusal to respect a student's gender identity or gender expression. Apparently, not even when it is parents who have a different opinion of the student. The policy states transgender and gender expansive students can participate in physical education or athletic programs based on the gender they identify with, and allows students to dress in a way that suits their gender identity as long as it's within the district's dress code guidelines. It also requires the district to designate and train one person as the primary contact for those students. Superintendent Thanen Knowlton said the policy will not result in any changes within the district. We're already doing this, he said. Oh, So don't be worried at all. So the most appalling aspect of this, or at least one of the most appalling aspects of this, is the fact that the state is openly stating that they may or may not inform parents. We live in insanity land where parents must be notified of thousands of other things, including many medical concerns. But when it comes to a student's sexuality, that information may be withheld by the state. But understand, Christians, that this is the logical conclusion of government schools. You cannot send your kids to government schools and entrust the government with the discipleship of your kids and then object when the government claims to have certain rights over your children that God did not give them. But this has been in the DNA of government schools from the get-go. The godfather of modern American education was John Dewey, and John Dewey wrote explicitly about his intention to imitate the schools of the communists and the Soviet Union. He wrote about the need to separate children from their families and churches in order to make them good citizens of the state. If there's anything that Christians can do right now to push back against all the governmental overreach, the liberal fascism of every form, it's this. Get your kids out of the government schools and do everything you can to encourage other Christians to do the same. Your children do not belong to Caesar. They belong to God. This is Toby Sumter with Cross Politic News. You can find this show and all the others on the Fight Laugh Feast Network at crosspolitic.com or fightlaughfeast.com. Support Rowdy Christian Media. Why wouldn't you want to do that? And join our club at fightlaughfeast.com. We also hope to meet you at our first annual Fight Laugh Feast conference in Nashville, Tennessee, October 1st through the 3rd, 2020, coming up in just a few months. Go to fightlaughfeast.com to sign up for our conference email list. Thank you for listening. Have a great day.